And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Deshaun Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Deshaun Reed. Ready to break down the Raiders' 45-20 loss on Sunday to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Obviously, a weird week for the Raiders. This was supposed to be a Sunday night football game. That's what we were all hyping up earlier in the week. The game ended up being changed to a Sunday afternoon game. The Raiders dealt with a whole mess of COVID-19-related issues with Trent Brown and Jonathan Abram unable to play. The rest of their starting offensive line unable to practice all week. Ultimately, whether that was the major factor in this game, hard to say. I mean, certainly having Trent Brown and Jonathan Abram out there on Sunday would have allowed for things to be maybe a little bit better, add some thump to that defense and add a little more protection on that offense. But Vic, for you, no excuses, right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of tuning out a little bit when after the game when everyone's talking about. Obviously, it's a very unique situation, the COVID-19 protocols and having the linemen not being at practice. And I get all that. But to me, it came down to, to the defense. I think the defense gets no pass rush. And I'm not sure, again, I mentioned it last week in the podcast. I don't know what happened in Kansas City for that one half, but I guess it was like a magic spell. Because that's like, I mean, I'm not sure how that's going to happen again. I just don't know how they can get pressure and affect the game. So I thought today, you know, the game got out of hand late, but I just don't know how you can beat good teams without a pass rush. And to me, it's more like they've lost now three out of four games. So the Chiefs game was great, but it's kind of stuck in the middle of this bad pattern. So I don't know if that bad pattern is going to go away anytime soon.
I think they're just going to have to be reliant on blitzing, and I think they really have to make a commitment to blitzing more, getting used to those blitz coverages, getting used to some fire zones and that type of deal, because David Irving might come in and he might spark some juice. But I mean, this rush was, non-existent today once again. And I just don't think there's going to be some miracle breakout players that fix this pass rush. I don't think they could have done it, commit to the blitz against Kansas City and against Tampa Bay, just because Mahomes and Brady are so good against the blitz. But now you're going to go against some quarterbacks that aren't good against the blitz, starting with Baker Mayfield. From this point on, Gunther really has to make a commitment to blitzing. And I mean, what else do you have to lose? You're going to give him a touchdown one play, or you give him a touchdown in four plays, So just do it.
Yeah, I don't think they can stick with just rushing four any longer. As you said, I mean, the secondary is getting picked apart anyway. So, I mean, you might as well give yourself a chance of at least a semblance of a chance of getting home. Even if it's just a five-man blitz, you don't have to go all out or anything of that nature. But I guess maybe one thing, we'll have to see. David Irvin, he was promoted to the active roster before this game, but he didn't play. He was ruled inactive before the game. But, I mean, one player isn't going to fix this issue that they have. And so I think they're going to have to start getting a little bit more creative with the scheme moving forward.
To me, the problem is when they blitzed earlier in the year, nobody got home. Tell me who got home on a blitz. I mean, I can't remember any. I mean, I don't know if they have guys who can do that. So I just think it's, like you said, either way you lose, but you lose a lot faster when you blitz and no one gets home. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like you mentioned, David Irving, hopefully he's got some juice left. And I think you got to get back and call up Chris Smith and Dayton Jones. They played well against the Chiefs, so give them a second chance. But the guys they have right now just aren't cutting it.
I think ideally you would want Littleton to be that guy, right? I mean, like, he has some success, or a good amount of success, actually, blitzing with the Rams. You would think that that's still something he could do. I don't think he forgot how to do it in a year. So, maybe now that he said after the game he's feeling more comfortable. He hasn't played well so far, but if he's just going to get toasted in coverage, I mean, you might as well send him on a blitz. Let's just try it. I mean, they have to do something. They can't just continue to do the same thing every week.
I agree. You got to try something. I agree. You got to mix it up somehow.
Yeah, I mean, and Gruden referenced after the game that it sounds like he he has something in mind that he wanted to change. I mean, Vic, you asked him, how do you address the lack of pass rush? And, you know, he said, well, I'm not going to say it here today, but, you know, reference the whole idea of if we're going to rush four people, we're going to have to do it a lot better today. So he seems frustrated with the defense. I don't know if that frustration is pointed at all in the direction of Paul Gunther, a guy who he's, you know, wholeheartedly supported his whole tenure here. I mean, do you gather any kind of idea that that's where some of that frustration lies?
I don't get the sense that Gunther's in trouble. I know the pattern's been bad, but I just don't get the sense that Gruden's there quite yet. I think another thing, I'm not sure who do you promote. I mean, Rod Marinelli, the D line's not been good, so I'm not sure how you reward him for their performance. And I'm not sure Wilson's staff can step, but you can't really hire from the outside. So I don't know if that's really the way you want to go at this point. I mean, especially a week after Gunther's biggest success was that second half against the Chiefs. So I don't get the sense that Gruden's quite there yet.
Yeah, I don't see anybody on staff that could take his place. I mean, Rod Marinelli's an old school cover two guy that's not going to blitz at all. So, you know, part of the reason why they hired Gunther was because he's a good blitz designer. I mean, that's what he did when he was in Cincinnati. He comes from the Mike Zimmer tree. So I think they have to get better at blitzing, and the only way they're going to do it is if they practice these things. And that's part of the appeal of getting Corey Littleton, is he was a good blitzer. Abram could be a good blitzer. LaMarcus Joyner could be a good blitzer. I think part of the problem was they just were really bad at blitz coverage. So quarterbacks were able to get rid of the ball quickly when they blitz. So they have to work on their communication and get things settled, you know, with their blitz coverages, and then just commit to that sort of philosophy, because what's happening right now is just not going to work.
Yeah, I got a lot of comments in my story, you know, fire Paul Gunther, like, why hasn't he done it already? Like, there has to be some upside to doing that. And as we said, there's no internal candidate. You can't really go outside and revamp the defense at this point in the season. Usually, you know, if a coordinator gets fired like that, it's a head coach trying to save their job, put the blame on somebody else, and Gruden is nowhere near being in that kind of scenario. So I just don't see it happening, you know, at any point this season. This thing just completely, like, it would have, I mean, this is pretty bad, but it would have to go all the way off the rails for him to jump ship, I think.
If they're going to make a transaction, there is a certain defensive end who is tweeting that his house in Cincinnati is for sale, who played for defensive coordinator Paul Gunther. Carlos Dunlap, unhappy in Cincinnati, 82.5 career sacks. Is that something the Raiders might have to consider going after?
Yeah, I say do it. I don't even know what the price tag is, but I say do it. I mean, obviously they need something, because this team obviously is a good enough offense where there are some real playoff possibilities. So you hate to waste it on a defense that can't do anything. So I think you got to bring in help. I mean, even at safeties. I mean, I think you need help at safety also. I mean, I know I've said that Thomas is kind of a disaster after what happened in Baltimore, but at this point, bring him in. I mean, I think you got to shake it up a little bit with these players.
Yeah, it's just kind of with the trades. I don't know who they, as we said, I don't know who they have to offer. They have a bunch of young players that they probably don't want to give up on at this point. And I don't think they're looking to trade any high draft picks. But I don't know, maybe sell high on Nelson Aguilar or something like that. But like, other than that, I don't really know, you know, what they could move for that kind of a player.
I mean, with what Dunlop's doing out there on Twitter, the price tag on him can't be too high. I mean, that you would think, I mean, the way he's begging out, they're in a position where they pretty much have to move him. And, you know, we've seen NFL trades that take a lot less draft capital than you expect.
Yeah, I think a fifth rounder would do it for Dunlap. I mean, it's not like he's been playing spectacularly, but he's probably going to be the Raiders' best pass rusher as soon as he gets in the building. I think his contract is doable. Obviously, you know, you talked about him having experience in Gunther's system. So you bring in Dunlap and Irving and you start blitzing more, and who knows, maybe they could generate some pressure.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So going back to Sunday's game, this was a game that was a one-possession game into the fourth quarter. The Raiders were down at one point, 24-17. They cut it to 24-20 when they kicked a field goal on fourth and one. They say closer to fourth and two. What do we all think about that decision? I mean, it was a chance where if they convert there, they can maybe tie this game. Instead, they get within 4 points and, you know, they hope to get a defensive stop. Not an analytic-friendly decision there. Did anybody support it? I know Derek Carr said after the game that he was arguing for them to go for it, but once they did kick the field goal, he thought it was the right decision, but I think that was probably him just playing nice.
Yeah, I got to keep that same energy. I was saying they had a similar situation in the Patriots game where, you know, they went down and scored right after they decided to kick the field goal, and obviously that game was more out of hand than this one, but I think you have to stay aggressive. I thought he set the tone, Gruden, early on when they went for that, went and converted that fake punt, you know, in their own, deep in their own territory. You would think that in that situation, I mean, whether it's fourth and two or not, like, you know what your defense is, even though they hadn't given up that many points to that point in the game, like, eventually they're going to break. Like, I just think at this point in the season, they just have to be aggressive at all times, especially in a situation like that, because, you know, you go from being down one score to one score. We made this point before, it doesn't really help you that much.
Yeah, I thought it was weird because of, you know, going for it earlier on the fake punt. I mean, why would you go for that? I mean, if you're going to go for that play and you're all out there, why not stay all out there and keep going for it? So I do think it was kind of a weird backtrack for John. But I think, you know, the problem for him, I think, is he's kind of, you know, he's an old school coach. So I think he wants to get the points, make a stop, get the ball back, and keep going momentum. Especially he mentioned it at home also. But again, his defense is not that good. So I think he's fighting it. But at some point, he'll have to realize he can't rely on his defense no matter what, pretty much. And you have to go for it, I would say, on fourth and two or less, pretty much whenever.
This is not football in the era that Gruden was coaching in 1998. Scoring was down. There was a lot more defensive stops. Nowadays, even, you know, without thinking about the Raiders' defense, the scoring is just up overall in the league. So you have to be more aggressive with these decisions, and you can't count on these stops, and especially when you have the Raiders' defense there. So I agree. I thought it was weird that he did go for a fourth down early on in the game, kind of like towards midfield, I believe, and then when you're close to the end zone, you have a chance to tie the game, you decide you're going to get conservative then. I think you got to make a decision on what your philosophy is, and you got to commit to it.
I will say this, though. I was just thinking about this, but they couldn't run the ball. I mean, obviously, the Bucs were definitely keying on the run. The O-line had some problems. Josh Jacobs, I think, had 17 yards and 10 carries. So I'm sure that's also weighing on John's mind. Like, you know what? We haven't been able to get 1 or 2 yards when we needed it. So it's obviously a tough call. It's easy to second-guess them. But, I mean, they weren't able to run the ball all game, so that's definitely a factor also, I think.
Is the run game issues, is that as simple as the offensive line issues? I mean, really, it's been a few weeks now that Josh Jacobs has not been able to get loose. This was obviously his roughest game, only 17 carries as a team, 76 carries, 3.2 per pop. And really, it was probably less than that until Rashard got a couple decent runs on that final drive. I mean, until then, Derek Carr was lined up to be the leading rusher for the Raiders. What can they do to get this ground game going? I mean, Trent Brown being out there helps, you would think, but having Gabe Jackson for four quarters helps, you would think, and we'll get into the whole ejection there in a minute, but what do they have to do to get this ground game going? That was supposed to be a big anchor of this team with Josh Jacobs on the ground.
Yeah, I think the offensive line is a pretty big part of it because it's been, you know, even though this game was the worst, it's been a thing this entire season. I mean, they haven't had, it was expected to be their offensive line going into the season for the first drive of the year, basically, and after that, it's just been a mix of backups and starters, and I'm sure, you know, there's some communication issues. That's what Colton Miller said after the game. And, you know, maybe Jacobs could read blocks a little bit better. But that offensive line, when you're going, you know, they basically had three backups starting at the end of the game today. You know, going up against as you said, it's been a multi-week thing, but going up against this Bucs run defense, I wasn't that surprised to see the effort today. But I don't think it's a situation where, like, you know, Jacobs regressed or anything like that. But it's just the blocking lanes aren't there.
Yeah, I did a pregame radio spot in Tampa, and I was telling him the Raiders wanted to run the ball. You know, that was their game plan. And the guy laughed at me. The guy, the on-air host, like, you can't run against the Bucs. I'm like, well, they're going to try. But he was right. You can't run against the Bucs, especially with your O-line being kind of a mess like it is for the Raiders. So I think, you know, Sam Young leaving the game hurt. I think he's been a reliable, you know, backup tackle in the league. So they were without Trent Brown, then also Sam Young, and Tashaun mentioned Gabe. So, again, the O-line, I think, is a big part of it. I mean, you almost want to give Josh a mulligan in this game.
The Bucs are on pace to have a historically good run defense, and you're going against that, and you have injuries on the offensive line. It's just tough, and like Deshaun said, they've been rotating on the offensive line. There's been no continuity. Richie Incognito has been hurt since, the New Orleans game? You know, he's one of the best run blockers in the league, so once they get this line healthy, I think the run game will get going. But they need to get some reps together. And they're going to be going against Cleveland, who is not very good against the run. Hopefully they can get some momentum going as far as their run game goes, starting with that game.
All right. The Gabe Jackson ejection. Obviously, the footage that, you know, everybody sees that was on the broadcast didn't really show anything ejection worthy. Unfortunately, the camera pans away from the action before we really see the completion of it. So I guess we can assume, and it sounds like the NFL, you know, basically said that they had other footage in terms of what John Gruden's understanding was that showed, you know, Vic, you talked to the referee after the game as the pool reporter, and he claimed that Jackson stepped on a player's shoulders. That's basically the story from the NFL standpoint. I'm sure everybody would like to see video of it. I don't know if we ever will. That was a tough blow.
It just, as you mentioned, the cameras cut away. Just as they were cutting away, you see Gabe going towards the player on the ground. You also see the official right there. The official is like two yards away, so he's right there on top of it. So I have to imagine whatever happened right in that moment, and the official saw it. So, I mean, I'm not sure what Gabe's going to say or what the, you know, but I would imagine that it was a legitimate ejection.
Yeah, I couldn't really see from up in the press box what happened. Not that I was looking to see. But I also don't remember Gabe Jackson, you know, kind of vehemently, what is that? What kind of call? You know, I didn't see a lot of protests from it. So,
you know, that's a good point.
That tells a lot.
Chances are he probably did it.
Obviously, you know, Ndamukong Suh did grab him by the shoulders and throw him down. I believe that was probably before this. I was looking through the wire photos. The photographers actually have a really good shot of Sue yanking Jackson down by the shoulders. So you could see where he would maybe be a little bit upset after that. And we know kind of the old adage in football is they always catch the guy who retaliates.
I think it's important to note, too, that Gabe Jackson's not known for doing this. I really don't even remember a dirty play from Jackson, too. So this is kind of uncharacteristic if it actually did happen.
Yeah, but Sue can get some guys riled up. He has his own history, so he probably did little things here and there throughout the game. And I don't know, Jackson might just snap. So, but, you know, I know a lot of fans have been talking about that, but that's not why they lost the game or anything, of course.
All right, let's find a little positivity to go out here with. Nelson Agholor, again, looks like a guy. I know Gruden mentioned after the game that they're hoping to get Bryan Edwards back next week, but even if they do, it's going to be hard to take Agholor off the field. Five catches, 177 yards. you know, the touchdown on that opening drive, which that was just a dime from Carr, you know, kind of put it in that spot where Aguilar would have to high point it. And he made a great catch. And Aguilar is really looking like a great find in free agency for the Raiders.
Vic, you were right. You were right.
Well, you know what? I hate to be a negative Ned, but he had like three or four drops of balls off his hands towards the end of the game. I thought he didn't finish very strong, and like the interception was off his fingers, and he had one on the goal line they should have caught. So I left the game kind of a little sour. I didn't think he obviously had a great start, but I thought his finish was not very good. So I mean, I think those are plays that he had to make in this game. He didn't make them, so I'm not driving the Nelson Aguilar train tonight.
You've hopped off.
Hopped off a little bit, yeah. Well, I might get back on later, but I'm not sure the number if it was three or four, but there were more than two. I think there were plays where the ball kind of went out, were right there, and he had a chance to make a play, and he couldn't do it.
I gotta watch the replay. I think they were iffy, but I thought the DB might have been pretty close to him. I think with Aguilar, he's good when he gets behind guys, but he's not a guy that you're gonna throw. Trust to make those contested catches. I just don't think he's done it consistently throughout his career, and that's where Bryan Edwards would go in. Obviously, Aguilar will still be a big part of the game plan, but I think with Edwards back, you'll get a little bit more in the intermediate area, a little bit more as far as contested catches.
Yeah, and as Vic tweeted after the game, I think Henry Ruggs only had, three targets in this game? I mean,
Nelson had nine to three, yeah.
And Henry, I mean, it looked like he might have tweaked his knee or something in his lower leg at some point in the game, so maybe he was shaken up. But I think you got to get that guy the ball a little bit more, especially coming off the performance he had against the Chiefs.
Throwing him the deep ball, I mean, I think they did at least once. Whether or not those connect, and you kind of think the more they throw him, eventually a few more of them will connect. But right now, they're just not quite on page with those. But I mean, I thought Derek Carr played fairly well. You know, I don't think this is not a loss that you are sitting there saying, Derek, I'll blame it on Derek Carr. I mean, I thought he played pretty well, not a perfect game, but certainly not a bad game by any means.
I thought he played a pretty good game, all things considered. I mean, the offensive line was a mess. He had no running game. You know, he was without one of his starting receivers in Bryan Edwards. And I know he had the interception, but I think that was one of those passes that went off Aguilar's hands. And so I thought he played pretty well. He was aggressive, pushing the ball down the field. He wasn't doing, you know, a lot of the check down Charlie stuff. You know, obviously that gets lost in the mix when you lose by 25 points. But, yeah, I wouldn't put anything on Carr really coming out of this game.
He used his legs well, too. I think he got two first downs running. Yeah, I thought this was one of his better games as far as using his legs because he just doesn't do it that much.
He also got the first kind spot, I think, in the history of Derek Carr running. He never gets good spots. I think a lot of it is his own doing. I think that one first down, I don't know if he quite got there, but he actually got a kind spot for once.
He said afterwards that I thought it was interesting. This is the best offense he's been on so far in his career. I thought that was interesting. I mean, obviously there's potential for it to be that good, but to me, I thought that was kind of a little of a leap. But it's good if he has that much confidence in his offense, and that's a good sign.
All right. Well, the Raiders will be back on the road next week. They are heading to Cleveland, take on Baker Mayfield and the Browns. I don't know if Odell Beckham will be available for the Browns. He was injured on Sunday. So we'll see what kind of team, what kind of performance Baker Mayfield has. He's been obviously up and down throughout this season, but Browns have found ways to get it done. So the Raiders, hey, it was not a good day. And obviously the roller coaster of this season is kind of, you know, winding here and there, but they're 3-3. The schedule is going to get a little bit more manageable here, but, you know, going to Cleveland and playing a team that's played well at times, played not so well at other times, is a challenge, and we'll see if they can get back above 500.
Should be a high scoring game. What was that game against the Browns 2 years ago? The shootout? That was a good game. Probably similar next week, probably like 51-48, probably.
51-48.
That's my prediction, yeah. I'm going early this week.
Take the over. Take the over.
51-48.
Yeah, it'll probably be a shootout. Like you said, I mean, you would think they would blitz Mayfield a little bit more, given how he struggled against the blitz so far this season. Even if they do get more pressure, I don't think this defense is very good regardless. So if the other team has any kind of offensive firepower, the offense is probably going to have to win a shootout for them to win. But I will say, I'm thinking, I've been picking against the Raiders for a lot of weeks now. I think I'm going to end my streak this week and go for them against the Browns. We can get there on Wednesday.
All right, so 51-48 Raiders. I like it.
Don't spoil it, man. We can't be making
it. Oh, yeah, sorry. Never mind.
Already. I said I think. It could change.
Oh, okay.
It could
change. There you go. Nice tease.
Good save.
Good save. I said 51-48. I didn't say who's going to win. I said 51-48, but I didn't say who. So.
He's leaving us in suspense. He can't change a score then. He's got to stick with that score.
Yeah, you got to keep 51-48.
Score is locked in.
All right, we'll talk to you guys again later this week.
All right, y'all. Peace.
Later.
Adios, muchachos, muchachas. I think there's a little bit of a warm sensation on his bum right now, probably, I think.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.